Hey friends, you're listening to Go Home Bob or You're Drunk, an Irreverent Media podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer. All lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey everybody, you're listening to Go Home Bible You're Drunk, the podcast where we dust off our Bibles and pull out our Abeka history textbooks and figure out why in the world were we taught this. My name is Justin. I am a graduate of a private religious institution, multiple private religious institutions, former pastor, former evangelical, and this week, former Christian. And I am joined today by a co-host.
Hi, yes, hello. I'm Tori, and I am also former Christian, part-time atheist, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, I do this podcast because I want to make people hate God, even though I don't believe in him. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah. I was watching a TikTok or reel or something by Kim Stover. For those of you that maybe don't know, I'd actually love to have her on the show. But she was talking about being, you know, an agnostic and like, but you have to be specific about what gods you don't believe in. Sometimes, like when you're in like agnostic and atheist spaces, like evangelical God, I don't believe in that guy. Like that God better not exist. I'm going to be disappointed if I die and evangelical God was actually real. Like. This world, no, like no.
I mean, it would explain a lot of things, actually.
I mean, it would make a certain kind of sense.
The fucked upness is the part that would make sense. So.
It, you know, like, I think, sorry, maybe I take this back. It would solve the problem of evil if evangelical God was the real God.
Mm-hmm.
Because.
Not a great guy.
Not a great guy.
Most days of the week. He's not doing his best.
Worst deity ever. Like, so, yeah. But typically, don't believe in that God. Don't believe in, you know, Mormon God, Catholic God. Like, no thanks. Not here for that. More expansive understandings of God. Yeah. I'll run with that all day long. But, yeah.
Cool.
No. That was a little tangent. Mostly just because I somewhat want to avoid today's topic for this week in evangelicalism.
Uh-huh.
Because our boy is back.
we're getting tired of it. We're getting tired of all of the this weeking that one Tim Ballard is continuing to do on a daily basis. This week in Mormonism, so, I guess, but same difference.
Yes. So for those of you that maybe don't know, Tim Ballard was the founder of the, what's it called? The Underground Railroad. No, not the Underground Railroad.
No, that's literally Operation Underground Railroad. Like, that's literally what he called it.
Operation Underground Railroad. Well, I kept wanting to say the founder of the Underground Railroad. I'm like, no.
Nope.
No,
that's wrong, not. Wrong person. Nope.
No. Operation Underground Railroad, which allegedly convinced a lot of, well, it didn't allegedly. It did convince a lot of people that it was instrumental in fighting human sex trafficking. And it turns out it was not at all. And matter of fact, Tim Ballard did a little bit of sex trafficking of his own. And the movie, The Sound of Freedom, starring Jesus Christ himself, Jim Caviezel.
That man is not well.
Yeah. So how he managed to finance a movie about himself that was number one at the box office on a random Tuesday last spring, I think. Anyway, so he's currently not under investigation, and that's a problem. And apparently the Utah state legislature decided to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I don't know, Tori, if you want to take the story from there.
Yeah. So there were, I hate that people are using this term, but there were several credible witnesses who experienced abuse from Tim Ballard That qualifier is stupidly unnecessary. And like sexual abuse, like sexual coercion. And yeah,
he pulled a little Abraham and Sarah, you know, like
maybe
we're kind of a reverse Abraham and Sarah.
She's my sister.
Yeah. Like she's my wife. This person's my wife.
No. He basically would go on these, he'd go on these little rescue trips, which were not rescue trips. You know, some of the women that he quote unquote rescued with Operation Underground Railroad literally ran away from the hotel room that he'd like locked them up in after he saved them. So he doesn't know what he's doing. All that to say, he started taking women with him from his organization on these trips to like Thailand or whatever, wherever the fuck he was going to like rescue children, ostensibly, quote unquote, not actually. Yeah. And then he would pull this bullshit about like, oh, we have to like have sex. We have to shower together. Like the traffickers have cameras in our hotel room probably, and they're not going to buy it if we're not fucking. And it's like, okay, you're a married couple on vacation, not fucking is pretty par for the course, I think.
That lines up with my experience. It's probably more suspicious if they're fucking every night.
Exactly. Like, yeah, one person's on their phone, the other person's watching TV. That's what married couples do in hotel rooms.
Like one's on the Candy Crush, the other's asleep.
Yep, exactly. Somebody's listening to a podcast and the other person's reading a book. Like, there's no fucking. Like, that's not real. And so, yeah, he pulled all of this shit. Several women came forward saying that he had sexually abused them and, you know, reported that to the proper authorities. And then once their reports got up to the Utah Attorney General, a dude named Sean Reyes, Sean buried them. Like, he just disappeared their stories and then threatened them. So, yeah, at this point, Utah AG Sean Reyes, piece of shit, I hope you listen to this, he's been accused of witness tampering and intimidation. And, oh, and he also had to retract his, like, support of Tim Ballard for the Senate of the United States because, you know, Tim Ballard also is a bad dude.
But yeah, they're friends and buddies.
Yeah. So basically, Sean was just, like, making this shit go away for Tim, and somebody figured that out and, like, went to the press about it, like started speaking up about it, and he got caught. So yeah, Utah State Legislature has decided unanimously, there's some subcommittee, what subcommittee is it? Legislative Audit Subcommittee, which is made up of
24 bipartisan state lawmakers. Like this is probably the most bipartisan thing that is happening in America right now.
Probably, which to me, like that is pretty fucking telling.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like, from what I understand, it sounds like people were kind of skeptical of the AG before this came out. Some people, some legislators, I mean to say. And so they're, now trying to figure out if the state attorney general's office was like meddling with this case or just like disappearing it for Tim Ballard so that, you know, he would be able to not get in trouble for all of the harm that he's causing. And I'm not going to lie, I fucking love this. I hope that Tim Ballard takes even more douchebags down with him in his fiery Hindenburg of death. Like, fuck that guy so hard. But not actually. Don't actually fuck him.
No. But, like, I don't know. Like, there was a Republican, Mike McKell, who I will just go on record and saying probably Mike McKell, Republican from Spanish Fork, I disagree with on everything.
Probably, yeah.
You know, but basically like being the attorney general is not a huge priority for him and people are frustrated. Like, it's like,
ouch,
this guy, we need to take him down. and I don't know. It's on the one hand, it's like sleazy fucking Tim Ballard again, sneaking onto this show. Mm-hmm. Like, it's frustrating, but also it's like,
he's a recurring
character.
It's kind
of a heartwarming story.
At this point.
But it's a heartwarming story that, like, somewhere in this country,
truly,
governance is happening.
Someone is being, like, held accountable for a thing. Someone who is not someone who's not a person of color, although Sean Reyes, again, fuck you for being the only, surely the only non-white people, non-white person in all of like Utah politics. I know that's not actually true, especially in Salt Lake City. But yeah, like, come on, man. Do better.
Mm-hmm.
You're making us look bad.
Let's not. Yeah. Just kidding. Come on. You're ruining it.
You're ruining it for the rest of us.
You were supposed to be a model minority.
Mm-hmm. God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a model fucking minority. Yes. Those are different.
So I don't know. It is a weird thing. Like especially as I just kind of look at like what's going on in like the state legislature right now in Ohio, they're like brainstorming their asses off on how to like thwart the will of the people mm-hmm. and cover up bullshit. And this is happening all over the country. Like, it's this is nice. It's nice. You love to see it when, you know, religious folks get held accountable. Like it's become this kind of like weird, like third rail or fourth rail. I don't know how that illustration works. But like in politics where it's like, you can't go after or accuse someone who did the bad thing they did for religious reasons. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you can, and you should. And we love to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Apparently there's another movie coming out, though.
About?
Sound of Freedom 2, To Sound to Freedom. I don't know.
I suspect that one will not be. I suspect it will not have a random Tuesday as the number one movie in America, if that is actually happening. And I have a hard time believing people are still willing to finance that shit. Like, anybody that's put money into that is probably pulling it back out.
Like, if you supported Operation Underground Railroad once, I had one of their t-shirts randomly I found in my drawer and immediately got rid of it once I realized, like, oh God.
Okay. Interesting.
It was like some partnership with Rogue Fitness or something. This was like 10 years ago.
Boy, that is, ugh, I hate every word that you just said. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. But I was like, so I get it. You know, if you gave money to the guy during the heyday of like Christians fighting sex trafficking, that's fair, you know, or if you financed one of his movies about his life, you got duped. I get it. But like at this point, if you're backing that horse, mm-hmm. you're complicit. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people backing that horse were complicit.
Yeah.
We're finding out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay. Distance yourself from Tim Ballard, folks.
I'm honestly, I'm a little bit like personally offended that this dude thought that like he could fill Mitt Romney's shoes. Like, you absolute piece of trash.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, nobody's going to find out that I'm literally committing sexual assault at work on the clock with like against colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I deserve to have Mitt Romney's seat.
Yeah,
I don't have like, enough fuck yous for this man.
And again, I do not like Mitt Romney. Like, policies.
He's been right about 5 things, maybe. And he's been in politics for 40 or 50 years or some shit.
Which, you know, being right about 5 things is pretty good for a longstanding Republican at this point.
Fair. Yeah.
But I don't think he was, like, committing sex crimes. And
I really doubt it. I've got to be honest. I really doubt it.
Yeah. You know, like, morally speaking, as far as his personal morality, not policy morality, but personal morality, I feel like we can give that win to Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
And,
which is weird. Because, like, I don't feel like we could give that win to Mike Johnson. Like, that dude looks like a predator.
Yes. If someone put him in a lineup of To Catch a Predator instantly, that man...
Okay, but you know the shitty thing about this is, like, he shows up at some house because he got catfish, and it's his own son sitting at the fucking table. That is what happened here.
Well, how the tables
turn. Yeah, that's what I think that's what I think has happened in this situation. Anyway, whatever. No, fuck that guy too.
We will cover that story when it happens. And Tim and Mike Johnson's son, if you're listening, if you're a fan of the show, and we managed to sneak past the Covenant Eyes, let us know.
Amazing. Oh my gosh.
We'd love to help you.
Also,
with this.
Like, blink 6 times if you need help.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I'm surprised the Twitter handle Mike Johnson's Covenant Eyes hasn't been taken.
Amazing.
All right. Well, yeah, we will continue to cover this story as it unfolds, which I hope is No more.
Never.
Never.
I hope it unfolds.
Yes.
In a beautiful jail somewhere in the mountains of Utah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, because we are abolitionists, but
they get out last.
Tim Ballard last. Tim Ballard last.
Oh, right. Man.
Thanks, everybody. Let's take a little capitalism break, and then we'll be back to talk about pilgrims, because tis the season.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for putting up with some capitalism, and bigger thanks to our patrons, slightly bigger thanks to our patrons, who don't have to put up with any capitalism or silly ads or, you know, listening to someone talk at you in Spanish telling you to buy mascara. I'm still getting Spanish ads on the show. If you would like to enjoy all of the perks of not ads, you can do that very easily by going to patreon.com/gohomebible, and you can sign up for any amount you want, and starts at $1 an episode. Super easy. Also keeps the podcast actually literally going. So very grateful to all of our patrons. If you would like to join them, and I know you do, then you can sign up there. Patreon.com/GoHomeBible. Super, super easy. Justin, I feel like I'm forgetting something. Am I supposed to? No? Okay, cool. I did
it. We
have
a Discord that we do the things. We have a
Discord. Yep. And if you sign up as a youth pastor, you get a life verse. Mm-hmm. Youth pastor or above, you get a life verse that you can cross stitch onto a pillow, and it will be completely out of context, which makes it great.
Like most Bible verses.
Like all Bible verses.
All Bible verses can be out of context.
Mm-hmm.
If you try hard enough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But we have another thing that we'd like to announce. Very excited for this. We are doing an event next February. So mark your calendars. President's Day weekend.
Mm.
It's going to be February 17th and 18th in Portland, Oregon. So very excited. It's going to be called Content Morning. That's where we're going to get a lot of cool folks together. Some former collaborators on the show, like Transvangelical. Tori is going to be there as well. A few other folks, several other folks, Janice Legata, Scott Okamoto, and the list goes on and on.
All our faves. And
really all of our faves. This was maybe just an excuse to get all of our faves together in one room. And we're going to talk, it's kind of a fuck you to purity culture, honestly. And we're going to be talking about our experiences and also just a way forward. How do you get out from under purity culture and all that nonsense? And even if you're like purity culture, that didn't impact me at all. It's going to be a lot of cool people to hang out with. So
true.
Even just for the hangs, it's a good time. So sign up for that. It's going to be contentwarningevent.com. Registration is already live. There's also a live streaming option. If you're like, I just can't make it there, but I still want to be able to participate. There's live stream options, in-person options. We got you covered. So check it out, contentwarningevent.com, and we'd love to see you there.
Yeah.
So it's Thanksgiving season, which is a completely problematic free holiday.
Problematic free holiday?
Yeah. Conflict-free holiday.
Love this. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Conflict-free holiday. Amazing.
So, but we're going to talk about, I mean, because the season is all about the pilgrims, right?
I mean, it was because for me, that's, you know.
Yeah, growing up, that was like that was the kind of the thing you were taught is that, you know, these Christian pilgrims came to the Holy Land, I mean, the New World. And
oh, but you were so close. You were so close.
I know. Came to the New World, you know, because they wanted to practice their faith freely. And that's what we do here in America. We practice our faith freely. Uh-huh. And they practiced their faith so freely that even the natives of the land wanted to come and celebrate them. That's kind of the story we were taught in so
right.
many words. And I think we're going to deconstruct that a little bit today.
I'm going to try.
And maybe give a real history of the pilgrims. But I think first, we have a conundrum.
We do.
Most of them are Bible-based. This one is going to be history-based. And I think this is actually going to be great fodder for the Thanksgiving table, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You can definitely take this one, too. Take this one to Thanksgiving with you if you were seeing friends and family. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, good times. Conundrum. Would you rather? And you might have to wait until you're done. You might have to wait until you're done listening to this episode to decide. But would you rather live in England in 1620 or live in New England in 1620? Are you living in New England as like a settler? As like you have to stay with the white people? Can you like run off and join the natives? Because like a lot of people did that instead of starving because duh. Yeah.
I'm going to let that be your choice.
Okay.
Because I mean, in England, you could run off into the woods and do like a whole Robin Hood thing if you wanted. So yeah, running off into the woods is an option.
Okay, that's fair. But if you did it in England and they caught you, you'd have to go to jail and eat like lice to stay alive. So like if you run off into the woods in New England.
Hey, you know, like if we've just learned anything about history, you played for keeps.
Yeah, fair. You know? Fair. Yep.
You know, your life was on the line no matter what you did. Because I mean, if you were in New England and you ran into the woods, they might. I mean, for me at least, they'd be like, "Who's this white motherfucker?" Like, no, we got enough of that.
No more. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, you remain the age and ancestry that you are currently.
Oh, okay.
And would you rather be in England in the 1620s or New England in the 1620s? I don't know.
I'm definitely going New England just because, like, and I wrote this down in my notes because I listened to a couple of books for this episode. British people just didn't figure out how to not shit in their drinking water. And they were told over and over and over and over and over again. And like, yeah, there were some indigenous people groups were very focused on cleanliness. Some were less so. None of them were drinking shit water.
I imagine the absolute dirtiest, like if you could have a scale, the dirtiest native tribe was probably cleaner than the average person in England in the 1600s.
Oh my God, truly.
Like the tribe known for being filthy was probably less filthy than anyone in England in the 1620s.
Oh, it was so nasty. And like, oh, I just, the more I read about like how British people kept prisoners, the more I'm just like, that entire country needs to be burned to the fucking ground. It's like,
honestly, it's likely at least one of my ancestors was transported from England. But not in the 1600s, probably, you know, early 1700s. Mm. For those of you who know, forcibly exiled because did something wrong. You know, indentured would be another. But the more I think about it, the more I'm like, that probably was a good deal.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we're making the case for people. But yeah, I think I'm going to say I'll take my chances in the woods.
Amazing. Oh my God.
I mean, and the patience of native folks probably who did take in English people. And they're like, can you stop shitting in the water?
Right. seriously, guy. But it was just, something I'm really struck by in all of this is like, very much along the same lines is how doing things a certain way was more important than like innovating to do them better.
Hmm.
Right? Because it's just like all of these people who were like getting frostbitten and like shitting in their watering holes. And they're just, it's so interesting that like indigenous people with much less technology were way more prepared for just like dealing with the fucking elements. And that is, I'm confused. I'm so confused. Nothing makes any sense.
Yeah. And I think you and I both read, I mean, I've read most of, I haven't read all of it, The Dawn of Everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, if you liked Sapiens, I think you would like The Dawn of Everything better.
Definitely.
For a couple of reasons. And one is just, he drags in the most dry, fun, academic way, Sapiens. But also, like, just, yeah, the ingenuity of indigenous tribes, not just in America, but
right. Over the world.
And honestly, I'll even take a step back and say the ingenuity of humans in our own state, wherever that happens to be, cannot be understated. Mm-hmm. And not just ingenuity with like finding fish, but like methods of governance,
yeah.
medicine, yeah. like all of these ways we organize ourselves mm-hmm. in order to bring about the greater good. And that's, I'm not going to like, the word whitewash keeps coming to mind. It's not the right word, but I'll just say whitewash. I'm not going to like shine native tribes in the sense that like, oh, everything they did was perfect.
Right.
It's not that at all. Yeah. But just like the ability to innovate and be flexible when you look at Europe and it's incredibly rigid religious societies, right. even today, honestly.
Yeah.
And even like, even the United States today, mm-hmm. like we're religious in ways that are just not helpful.
Right.
Like, so yeah.
Don't serve anybody.
Do not serve us.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of being like rigid and sort of like inflexible, that was part of why this story happened, because, you know, like the Church of England, which I suppose, you know, fair critique, the church is the state, is the church. I can see how people be like, this is some bullshit. Like, mm-hmm. you did have to go to church in England in the 1500s, 1600s, and you had to go to state church, and you got fined if you didn't go.
Yeah.
Not fun. Not great. Not a great time.
And if you're a man, you had to practice archery in the afternoon.
And yet, somehow, the pilgrims couldn't find anything to eat, despite this. Mm-hmm. Very strange.
It may have been earlier than the 1500s, okay. but... like, yeah.
They were not prepared. And somebody, in one of the books that I read, somebody made a point of like, it's kind of a miracle that half of them survived, not that half of them died. mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, fair. Anyway, so the Church of England is on this thing. They're getting high on their own supply. I don't know what to say. They're just like, they're not well. And I don't know how much money, like, was being spent to enforce the police state of the church, but it seems like it was a lot. It seems like it was a lot of money. And like, I just don't understand why it's like, what is the point of this? What problem does this solve, forcing people to go to church? Like, so there's a part of that that I kind of understand. And anyway, yeah. So Church of England came about because Henry VIII was like, I need to divorce my wife. And the Pope was like, LOL, go fuck yourself. And Henry was like, yeah, no, you go fuck yourself. And basically like yeeted the Catholic Church all the way out of England and declared himself the supreme ruler of the Church of England. And maybe God or some shit. That man was not well.
Which, can I just point out, though?
Please.
I was watching a researcher on TikTok who researches like women's studies and marriage, like talking about marriage as a concept, at least as we practice it today, you know, really came out of, you know, what we understand, you know, this Church of England nonsense. Mm. And it was designed to end. Like, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, the average marriage, like throughout history, has lasted about 10 years.
Because somebody died.
Mostly because somebody died. But you know what I mean? Like, and we're still using the vows that were established in the Church of England during this decision.
Oh my God. So same gross.
Same vows that Henry VIII took multiple times.
Uh-huh.
And when he divorced his many wives. So I don't know. I guess the point of that little side story is like, it's okay, folks. Mm. Like, we live way too long.
Oh my God. Way too long.
Like, if you have a marriage that has lasted a decade, good for you.
Congratulations.
You have surpassed the historic average.
Yep.
Like, you go 15 years, like, pat on the back, my man. Like, you did good. You did your time. And if you go longer, great. If you can't, like...
Also good.
Also fine.
Yeah.
Because it the institution was not created to last 50 years.
It wasn't. They would have done it differently because it doesn't really do that on its own super, super well.
Yeah.
Cool.
So sorry, odd rant, but I was just like, oh yeah.
Also, little known factoid. Yeah. Speaking of weird times in medieval England, something that I did not know and found out in my research as well, like this is all like setting the stage. I'm like, before any of this shit even started, Fox's Book of Martyrs. What the ever loving fuck? Like, I knew it existed because of that book that like DC Talk wrote had ghost written. So I knew that Fox's Book of Martyrs existed because this was like the whatever DC Talk book was supposed to be like a spinoff or of that or something. What I did not know is that in that book, it claims that England was God's new chosen people displacing the Israelites. And that God had chosen them to take this like mantle from the Israelites of being like the people that God chose. And England's like, now it's our turn. And I did not realize, because I'm every day I'm more struck by how Christianity and like Americanism cannot extricate themselves from each other and how bad that is for, you know, the rest of us. Holy shit. So it's like,
yeah. And the pilgrims, we're the new chosen people.
The pilgrims took that to America and they're like, it's not England anymore. It's us.
Yeah. And it was a genuine debate, like in my seminary, not my undergrad, sorry. Mm. Like, what do we do with the Jews? And not like in a like final solution sense, but just in the like, are they still God's chosen people at all? Are we the new Israel? You know, these are debates that are still happening and still being decided. And the conclusions that a lot of folks come to come right out of that kind of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all the direct lines from the pilgrims to white evangelicals in 2023, it's like astounding how many layers of this there are.
And the odd thing is, like, the folks that wrote the Constitution would have also thought the pilgrims were batshit crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like, religious zealots and not terribly smart, it turns out.
No. That zealotry tends to not churn out intellectual giants.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Anyway, so, yeah, where does this, I was like, where do you even start with this? I feel like getting to the point where they leave, for me at least, was kind of like, oh, this is how the U.S. got to where it is now, is like our myth-making about this story and how these people wound up at Plymouth Rock, which apparently is like 2 feet by 3 feet or some shit. I did not know this until I saw it on TikTok. How this all gets started, one gentleman by the name of, I'm going back in time a little bit. I'm going about 50 years. We're starting about 50 years before. 50 years before the Mayflower takes off, Robert Brown starts preaching against the Church of England, or dissent preaching was a term I did not know existed. Kind of like that, actually.
Which, that sounds badass.
It does. Dissent preaching, it sounds pretty badass. And, you know, seeing as, like, it was the Church of fucking England and therefore the law of the land, this maybe wasn't his brightest idea. But he became very popular for having a dissenting opinion on, like, official church stuff, trademark, because it was the 1570s, and that was like the equivalent of being like a viral TikTok star or something back then, something to talk about. So anyway, in 1580, Brown becomes the first person to secede from the Church of England. What the fuck? I cannot deal with this. Again, that's illegal, right? Like, that's like somebody in like Texas or Alaska being like, okay, we're seceding now. Like, no, you're not. Nice try, honey. And so while this is happening, so he does this, he tries to secede from the church, whatever. He starts his own church, and the Church of England is like, sweetie, no, and throws his ass in jail, obviously. So this is like the start of this whole big thing where Brown just keeps like getting out of jail. He goes and he preaches against the Church of England and gets thrown in jail. And like, it goes around and around and around. He gets sentenced to death. The Queen of fucking England has to intervene personally to stop his death twice. And after, at that point, he was like literally the Queen of England provided a stay for him twice. He was like had the rope around his neck. Dude was going to die. And he came to his senses at some point after many rounds of this. He apparently realized that like the wages of separatism is the gallows and rejoined the Church of England. Fucking love this. But like, the Puritans, and then the Separatists, who became the Pilgrims, they were like, oh, fuck yeah, we like this guy. Like, this is great. Even though he, like, basically renounced everything that he'd done to, like, not get hanged, which I find very fair, personally. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's what I would do.
Yeah, I don't want to get hung, please.
Please, and thanks. So he inspired a lot of, in the closet, I guess, like, Church of England dissenters who named themselves after him. Like, they started calling themselves Brownists, even though, again, like, this whole endeavor lasted, like, 5 or 6 years. And then he was like, okay, I'm done. I'm out. This is too big of a risk. So following this, like, following his shenanigans, people in England start these little underground house churches, essentially. Like, they start secretly meeting away from church. And there was a small English, oh, it's still very small. Also, I looked this up. There's a small English village by the name of Scrooby. You might remember from your Abeka history textbook.
Yes.
And I don't know. It's about a 3-hour drive north of London, because I was like, I don't know anything about geography in this place. It has 8 different names. I do love, however, that in the year 958, the area was known as Scroopenthorpe or something. It has a letter in it that I don't recognize, but I was like, this is so great.
Wow.
So yeah, this is where the pilgrims really get their start. Especially one William Bradford, among some others, but he was the one that did all the writing. So he's the person whose thoughts we have pretty much verbatim from all the writing that he did about his whole life. Like, he was just I guess he learned how to read and write. He was a journaler. And he was also started out as a rather sickly kid. So he spent all day inside reading the Bible and Fox's Book of Martyrs. So again, like, these people were religious zealots and, like, not in a super, in a way that's fairly detached from reality, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, oh boy. Like,
they really got into dying for Jesus and being the new Israel.
And, like, what I have all these questions of, like, what draws people to this? Why are there so many people like this? Why does it feel contagious?
And like, there were a lot of English dissenting movements. Like,
fair.
There's ones that people maybe know, like Baptists and Anabaptists,
right.
But I was kind of like looking through just different groups when I was like kind of looking at this today. And I think my favorite ones are the Muggletonians. Yes.
Oh, God.
The Muggletonians, named after Ludovicky Muggleton.
Beautiful.
It's a 1651, so a little bit later. But it was 2 London tailors announced that they were the last prophets foretold in the Book of Revelation. And, like,
genius.
And they opposed the Quakers, and, like, they just kind of,
rude.
Like, they were hostile to philosophical reason.
Oh, my God.
Very, very under the banner of heaven vibes, you know?
That's a nice way to put it.
I know.
That's amazing. Oh, my gosh.
You know, I mean, they were pacifists, you know, like, and refused to evangelize. So, obviously, they died out very quickly. And points for them, I guess. But it's just kind of like, it was just odd that it's a time where just, like, 2 tailors can be like, were the prophets foretold in Revelation, and like the
people, like,
and
okay.
People were like, you know what, you're probably right.
Oh God, again, I don't. Maybe there just wasn't very much happening back then. I'm not really sure. Yeah, so I don't know what draws people to this stuff. Of course, just for context, also, like, the Puritans were the people who wanted to change the Church of England from within, which I feel is, again, a little bit more rational. I would like to not go to British prison. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, the separatists, aka future pilgrims, are just going on and on and on about how, like, the Church of England is, like, too worldly or too Catholic, depending on what thing they were complaining about that week. It was like somehow they were both too worldly and too churchy. And yeah. Anyway, they're like, not doing this. So after several rounds of getting put in jail, because apparently, again, these people they don't have eyes. Like, why are you not paying attention to who's looking at you when you're going into someone's house to have an illegal church service? I have so many questions. Separatists were like, maybe we should leave. there's other places around here that are not trying to kill us for not wanting to go to church on Sundays or for, you know, being church dissenters or church secessionists. Is that, that means to, secession is two different words. I'm just really, seceding. Okay.
And secession.
Secession. Yeah. Anyway, so they got a little tired of being thrown in jail, which again, very, very valid. And I do feel like maybe some of these folks were not particularly bright, because if you are raised from birth on like poop water and beer, maybe they just couldn't see well or something.
Kind of like baby boomers and lead paint.
I feel like it was like that. It was like English people and poop.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, there was a little too much. You guys are eating a little too much poop back then. So they were like, you know what? Fuck this. Let's go to Amsterdam. Wise decision, I would argue, for anybody leaving a British jail. I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to get the fuck out of here too.
I would rather live in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much. Especially if the other option is like Britain torturing you for being the wrong kind of Christian.
Note how we didn't make that an option in the conundrum, because it's just too easy.
It's too easy.
Yeah. Of course, like, I'll go to Amsterdam.
Go across the water. Not that hard. So, yes. The pilgrims, they decided to do this. But again, they are religious zealots with very poor risk analysis, possibly because all they did was talk to each other and, like, pray. And I'm not, again, like, not super trying to throw shade right there. Like, they did call themselves separatists, and that was a crime. Obviously, like, these people were brave enough to get sent to jail in Britain. But, like,
see, here's the thing. If you're going to go to jail, like, go for, like, we're, like, trying to, like, feed poor people. Oh, or, like, here is a social injustice we're trying to wrong. Not, like, the church isn't worshiping hard enough.
Uh-huh.
Like, of all the things to go to jail for, pick something worthwhile, yeah. Maybe?
Yep.
I don't know.
It seems like that would be a way to, I don't know.
The church is too Catholic or not Catholic enough. Right. Who the fuck cares? You're in jail. You're in 16th century English jail.
They didn't feed people.
For that?
They didn't feed people. In those, I did not know that if you were in prison in Britain, they didn't fucking feed you. I'm like, I'm so mortified. Yeah,
someone else had to come feed you or you would die.
Or you would starve. I can't. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can't get stuck on that or my brain is going to break. So they decide to leave England. That is its own ordeal, because although King James was like, we are going to sweep all of these like separatist churchy people out of England, and then he makes it illegal to leave England if you are not in good standing at the church. So
sounds
great. Again, sounds like a very bright
prime minister of
very
Israel.
Very bright people here. Uh-huh, exactly. So this meant that the pilgrims needed to leave the country illegally.
Oh gosh.
A thing that happens, I suppose. So they contacted a captain that was willing to take them to Holland. Wonderful. Great news. They paid ahead. They sold all of their belongings. They sold their homes. They arrive at the like designated spot at the scheduled date. And as they're boarding the ship, like there's some commotion on the shore, and like the authorities like burst onto the docks and arrest the escaping Christians, and the captain sails off with their money. And probably some of their stuff.
Nice.
So again, a bunch of them go to jail.
You know, religious folks are a good grift.
I legitimately felt bad for these people. Like, my partner was like, you shouldn't actually feel that bad for them. Like, they were bad people. And I'm like, I get that. But also, they were human beings. And they were so not bright.
So much taken advantage of.
All of the time. Like, they were taken advantage of the
time. They probably called
it
persecution and, like, God testing them or something.
Well,
it's like, no, you're just dumb.
Jumping ahead a little bit, I did not know this. The Puritans and the Separatists were, like, hardcore Calvinists. So everything happened because God explicitly said this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that. I didn't learn that. I wasn't raised Calvinist. I didn't. Yeah. So I wasn't taught any of that part of the story, interestingly. So anyway, they gather up all their shit. They try again after they get out of jail again for fuck knows how many times this has been. And they get a Dutch captain this time. So I guess maybe more trustworthy. And he actually is sincerely trying to take them to where they're going. But once again, like, they get fucking caught as they're getting on the ship. This is the second time. And it's not because the captain called the cops on them. Like, the captain was, like, going to seriously take them. So most of the men and the stuff is, like, on the ships. And the captain's like, nope, fuck this. I'm not supposed to be here. And I am not a citizen of this country. And I'm not going to get in trouble for this. And just, like, takes off. So all the women and children are just, like, left on the ship. Dustin, these people, like, I can't not feel, like, I can't not feel bad for them. Even, like, is total fuckwads.
Okay, at this point, I do kind of feel bad for them, too. Like, you just, like, you know, these are children. Right. Like, you know.
Yes.
There's children.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. So they finally all get to fucking Amsterdam. They have religious freedom, and they don't know what to fucking do because they've never had this before. So they all start fighting. Because they,
as you do,
right? Well, they define themselves by, like, what they were against for decades at that point. And then it's like, here you go, freedom, do whatever you want to do, nobody gives a fuck, this is Holland, hooray. And they're just like, oh, well, now we have to fight over, like, doctrinal stuff.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the, like, rebellious kid that gets kicked out of conservative Christian college and then, like, goes to a state school, and then it's like, no one gives a fuck. Right, exactly. Like, oh, you drink beer? Ooh. Like, I don't, no one cares.
Right.
You can't rebel hard enough.
Literally here. No one cares. Like,
we don't, like, you snuck beer into your dorm room? Cute. Would you like one? Here. Like, a lot of interesting life lessons you could pull from the whole, like, we've only defined ourselves what we're against. Yeah. And now that we don't have that thing, we're just going to fight each other.
Uh-huh.
Something possibly to chew on and your friends giving with your deconstruction pals. Just,
oh my God, for real.
I want to think about it a little bit.
Right.
But,
oh my God, for real. For real. So, you know, these were, like, English country folk. Again, not a diss. That's just what they were. They were farmers, and they wind up in Amsterdam. And so they're also, like, completely overwhelmed by that shit because it's a big fucking city, even in 1610 or 1607 or whenever they got there. So they, you know, that was a big adjustment for them. Like, having religious freedom was a big adjustment for them. The pilgrims, future pilgrims, again, decide to, like, move one town over to Leiden, which is a lot smaller than Amsterdam, but not Amsterdam by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. And so they finally, like, they make it here. They, like, get housing and get jobs. And it's still kind of overwhelming for them. I think, you know, it's just such a huge switch of, like, being in the country all of the time, constantly, and then being in a city and having to, like, you know, everybody gets up at the same time and walks to work at the factory. Like, you know, mm-hmm. pre-industrial England or whatever, sort of.
This is some real Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt vibes.
It, you know what? It kind of is a little bit. It kind of is. And then, like, so they're, but then they're here for about a decade, right? And their kids start growing up. And their kids are not staying English. Their kids are becoming Dutch, which is not good. It's very bad. That's not how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to stay English and not fit in because we're Christians or God's chosen people or some
we're
shit.
We're the new Israel.
We're the new Israel. You know. How dare you grow up and, like, become a productive member of society in the Netherlands? Like, that's obscene. So again, like, they left England because even though you had to go to church, like, it was illegal to not go to church. England was not churchy enough for them. And then they're like, we can't stay in Holland. Like, our children are being corrupted by becoming productive citizens. They don't care about all the stuff we care about. This is ridiculous. So they're like, okay, we're going to try to find a way, like, get a boat, get out of here. It goes about as well as you would think, actually. I do need to interject, though, one thing right before they go, because again, All of this echoes so fucking hard still. So one of the books I read for this episode was, like, there was a comet that convinced the separatists that, you want to guess, Justin, what did the comet convince them of?
I don't know.
The apocalypse is coming. Mm-hmm. it was going to occur at any moment, and they needed to purify themselves more than they already had. Like, how is that possible? And I was like, my initial response to this comet situation was like, oh my God, this is like typical medieval bullshit. Like, you know, you wake up one night and there's a thing in the sky that was not there before. I get that. That's a little freaky. People have always been a little spooked by comets. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, I get that.
It wasn't like that. That was not how it was, Justin. It was not one comet. Oh. It was three fucking comets in 3 months, one of which was so bright you could see it during the day.
Okay, you know, I might have thought the world was ending.
Thank you. Then as well. I was like, okay, that would fuck me up now, and I don't believe in any of this shit. So.
Fair, you know, especially you know when you're a English separatist just looking for something to separate from.
Planet Earth is like your ultimate separation goal. You're like, I am separated from the planet. Like,
we have separated from the Church of England. Now we're going to separate from the world.
Oh my gosh. And these poor English people who must have been like suffering from like the heaviest possible doses of fucking mercury and dysentery water and whatever the fuck, like they're having these delusions. And, you know, as a person who didn't have to like deal with any of that shit, I would also be freaking out a little bit. So I was like, okay, I guess I can give them this. But they decide, they're like, okay, we're leaving. This isn't churchy enough for us. So they start trying to pack to get to North America. None of them know how to do that, by the way. So they basically like kind of do the like indentured servant thing. Like there are all these people in England who are like, oh, wow, we don't have any more resources left. We used all of ours. We're not going to continue to be a superpower in the world unless we start taking resources from North America. So there were all these businessmen in England who were like financing, who were paying for trips for people to go to North America to like find furs and cut down trees and find spices again, all of the normal white people things. So they sign up for one of these little programs. Amazingly, don't actually get super taken advantage of with this one yet until several years later, actually. But they do ultimately end up getting screwed over by these people, too. They also buy their own ship, right? So they sign up to go across in the Mayflower, and then they buy their own ship called the Speedwell, which is pretty small. But they were like, hey, it'll be nice. We can like zoom around and it'll be easier to navigate. Small ship. Cool. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. The captain that they hired for the smaller ship, the Speedwell, intentionally sabotaged it. after they were all on it.
Wow.
It's just unfucking believable, these people. And like, you're doing this to yourselves. Like, it was a little bit heartbreaking. Anyway, so they're like, I guess we can't do this. So they cram everybody that they can onto the Mayflower, which is not everybody that they were originally planning on taking. And then they finally leave.
And like, this is after Jamestown has like been founded and
fucked like, up,
fallen many times. Like hundreds of people have died.
Oh my God.
In Jamestown. And
and
it is known.
The numbers that I read were absurd. Like one of the books that I read said like in this period, I don't remember exactly how many years, but they're over, you know, a decade or two, there were about 3,500 people that were sent to the New World to like establish colonies or whatever. And 500 of them survived.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, it's absurd. Like the death toll, and again, like the pilgrims on the Mayflower were like 100 people. Like it's not. So they're like they're seeing thousands of people die, and they're like, you know what?
This is
a good idea.
Oh my gosh! And yeah, just man. And so there actually isn't that much information about the actual trip because I think it was traumatizing as fuck. They left at the beginning of September, like September 9th or something like that. They were on this boat for 66 days. There's not a lot of information because they don't know how far west they've gone, that they didn't have technology to keep track of that. And they're also living in this like black box, right? So it's like this in-between deck. It's not even like a real deck. It's like 75 feet long, less than 5 feet high. people have like cut up curtains to put up to like have some amount of privacy. And the entire thing is like covered in chamber pots, which probably doesn't help if you're already feeling seasick to have just like open cans of shit around.
Sloshing around on the open sea.
There were also children on this boat. And there's one group of siblings that like, I can't even, my brain breaks like thinking about it, but they were like taken from their, they didn't know their dad really, because their dad was always like gone on business. Their dad accused their mom of, I don't know, infidelity or something, and is like, my children need a new start. So he puts them on this fucking ship, does not come with them. So like the one adult they've ever known, they don't ever get to see again. They get put on this like fucking Borg cube in the middle of the ocean. It's made of wood.
Jesus.
Like truly, truly traumatizing. Like I can't actually comprehend like that kind of trauma. So I'm like, okay, I understand why like nobody was writing anything down during this time. Although there was kind of a fun fact, ish, funnish fact. I didn't, not fun, but interesting. There were three pregnant people on the Mayflower. One of them gave birth on the ship, which I'm just like, Jesus, be a Clorox wipe. I can't even fucking imagine. I cannot fucking imagine. She did name her son Oceanus, though, which I love. So that was fun.
It's a pretty badass name.
It's a pretty badass name. Still, like, at least one of the other pregnancies didn't have, like, a real great time, which I suppose is not terribly surprising, given that every surface in this little black box that they were living in for 2 months was like had to have been covered in like shit and vomit and cum and like who knows what else is going on down there.
Yeah, every bodily fluid can imagine every is single sloshing one. Around.
Yeah, it just my brain again is broken.
For 60 days.
Yeah, 66 like, days.
That's longer than, like, when this airs, like, that's longer than what we have left in this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, oh my gosh. Anyway, whatever. I don't, these people, but they did it. They made it.
I would like to, it'd be great to be like, at what point was someone like, oh, fuck this. Like, mm-hmm. like what? No, this is not it. Maybe not, simply because like once you're in that situation, your choice is to like mentally break down to the point where you just become a gibbering mass of nothing, or you just double down on your convictions.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
that this is God's will.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's,
I think those are really the options at that point.
Yeah. It seems like one person did the first option and then most of the rest of them did the second. So, yeah, one person didn't do super well. You know, it's like transporting plants. It's like sometimes when you're moving, it's like sometimes they're not going to all make it.
They're just not all going to make it. And you accept that as you start.
Right,
you
right, know. Right. Exactly.
That's why they had 102 people. They figured at least two of us.
Yeah.
Are not going to make it.
Yeah. They also had two dogs, which I thought was very cute. But like, seriously, dogs and kids and people giving birth and like pots of shit. I just, no, 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 no. So I did think, you know, they get there. I, in my head, I was like, oh, yeah, like this, the story that we've all been fed is like total bullshit. And I'm sure that they were like awful to the native people. The pilgrims, at least for themselves, were largely not bad to the native people, Indians, whatever they were calling them. That's not necessarily at all reflected by anybody else who came to the New World at all. But the pilgrims actually rather quickly were like, oh, we need to pay for this land. They happened upon like a beach close to a former Indian village, but because a plague had come through like a few years before, everyone in the village
brought by white people.
Yes, almost certainly. Like they, I don't know if they know
the land was deep.
It was probably
the land was depopulated.
Yes,
because of the disease. Plague that was brought by white people.
Exactly. But again, they weren't taking land from people that did live there necessarily. So I'm like trying to draw this very interesting line, and I don't know if it can be drawn or not. It's like, that's a little tenuous.
Yep. Yeah, I will. From what I've read, the actual pilgrims, as dumb as they were, I think their biggest crime was being dumb.
And like this, they the Mayflower suffered for that the most. More than
and they paid for that crime. And I think whatever help that they got, whatever, you know, patronage they received from natives was out of pity, deserved.
Truly out of pity. Yeah, they had like, again, they wind up in this place that's got all these like natural resources, but they can't catch the fish because they don't have the right nets to catch the fish that are there. They don't have any bows and arrows. They only have their muskets, which are not good for, you know, aiming at things. They were really like initially very terrified of the native people because, you know, racism and whatever. But yeah, at least for them specifically, like the interactions that they had with the native people, they did obviously like interject themselves into like politics that were already happening there, as colonization is wont to do. There's already like political things shaking out. But yeah, the Indians did mess with them a bit, which I loved. Loved that the first several months that they were there really fucked with them pretty hard, and like made it up a little bit. So obviously, like the Pilgrims, as you know, found some corn that somebody had buried. They like took it with them because they were starving. Only half of the people on the ship survived to like the next spring. And so I just had like two or three little anecdotes from the native people that I fucking loved. So the men were out working at some point during the winter, and somebody sees like an Indian or two or something. So like they fire a musket like into the air to like tell everybody to come back to their little whatever meeting house / mud hut / disease distribution place. And
disease distribution center.
It was originally the DDC, and so the men ran back to their little fort to get their muskets. The forest is completely silent. They stand there for like a while waiting to see what's going to happen, and finally they decide to go back and continue working. They go back up to the forest, and like all of their tools had been taken. We're just so fucking funny. Amazing. The Indians pulled some more shit like that. That was incredible. It was like another time again, they were like working, and I think they were outside of the forest in their little like whatever weird wooden tent situation ship. And so, again, like somebody sees some Indians, so they like grab their muskets or like ring whatever bell or some shit. And like the Indians line up like right in the woods where you can't super see them and just start like firing arrows, like just everywhere, you know, like 300, like we're just gonna like darken the sun with our arrow situation. And yeah, so the Pilgrims, like they try to like fire back, and after several minutes, like all of the yelling stops, everything is quiet. Everything around the men had been shot to shit, like full of arrows, and not a single dude was even injured.
That's great.
It was like an amazing, amazing troll. Fucking loved it. I will say, like, the Indians too, like, they also, the tools that they took, they also gave them back, like, the first time that they actually went and, like, met them. Mm-hmm. Which I was like, see, they were just messing with you. Which I think is fair, seeing as you brought diseases. And I didn't, okay, I don't know how I didn't know this, but, like, somehow I didn't know. It was like four months after they originally arrived that they finally like had contact with like the native people, like, you know, not arrows and having shit stolen and stealing people's food and whatever. But I totally forgot that like this person, Samoset, walks up to them and is like, "Welcome, Englishman."
Yeah.
In English. I was like, oh, I don't know why that like just completely, I spaced that. That was what happened. Holy shit. So,
yeah. And I think I actually, for some reason I think I mixed him up with someone else. Cause I had thought for a long time that he actually had spent time in England, but Squanto. I think he learned. Yeah. I think I mixed him up with Squanto.
Yeah, that's fair.
He had, Samoset had learned English from English fishers, right, that had like gone through in Maine and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and so, like, and that's another thing too, that we're not taught. It was like the we're kind of taught like the Pilgrims were the first white people right. ever to be here, you know, like it's like, no, there was a lot of not colonization, but there was a lot of trade, a lot of fishing, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, like contact,
right.
at least intermittent enough for folks to exchange language and exchange goods yeah. and, you know.
Yeah, no, that was a regular
thing. And enough for people to like, these guys are easy to fuck with.
Right, right, like, exactly. No, like there were over the course of the summer, there would be like several hundred ships that would come across, which I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. Even at this point, even like 1620, like several hundred ships would come across in the summer to like fish, and then they'd go back to England or, you know, the Netherlands or wherever they'd come from. But yeah, so Somerset had interaction with yeah, the fishermen that way. But Squanto got taken to, like, I don't know, that poor guy. Man, he got dragged all over the goddamn place. And yeah, that's its own story, honestly. Like, what happened after they got there? I just like those two little anecdotes. But like, it's such an interesting story to me. But I was legitimately surprised to find out that, like, of all of the white people who arrived here, like, honestly, the Pilgrims were the best of them mm-hmm. in terms of, like, how they treated the Indians, which, you know. The bar is pretty low, but they didn't even try to convert them, really. They didn't put any effort into that, which, again, I'm just like, okay, that to me feels like a really big deal. You're not actively
trying. It's a big win for
right.
you.
They really didn't.
This is what we call growth.
They really didn't put any effort into, like, forcing them to convert. Like, they would talk about, like, God and whatever, and talk about, like, oh, we can't trade because it's the Sabbath and we don't work on Sundays, things like that. But they, like, never made any kind of effort to convert any of the local people to Christianity, which, again, mm-hmm. huge fucking deal for white folks. Although, flip side, I will say this and then we can be done. So the Pilgrims had this seal that they eventually, like, put onto a flag or whatever. So this is one of their problematic moments, times, thoughts, worldviews. They put together this little seal for their, you know, colony. It is it's like a flag. It's got St. George's cross on it. It's got four people in each of the little quadrants, and they're wearing like indigenous clothing, like indigenous style clothing. And what they wrote around this image was, come and help us, or come and save us, in Latin. And then they got there and it's like they were the ones that needed saving, like, multiple years in a row. Mm-hmm. Like, part of why they didn't actually all die off, like, part of why their colony was more successful than Jamestown was because they actually, like, made an effort to be decent. You know, decent in, like, mm-hmm. 1600s English, whatever. Like, again, very low bar.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they made a sincere effort to be decent to the native people. And, you know, there were definitely some things that happened that were fucked up. But overwhelmingly, in terms of white people doing a thing, yeah, mm-hmm. they were in terms of doing colonization, like, they were the least harmful of any, like, colonial venture I've ever heard of. Yeah. Yeah. So they had that going for them. And then, surprise, surprise, they create New England and raise their children there. And their children grow up and don't give a flying fuck about being Pilgrims or Puritans mm-hmm. or Englishmen. They just do not care. And that makes them all very sad. So,
mm-hmm.
okay, yeah. Boomer energy, like, from the jump in this country.
Yeah. Strong parents of homeschoolers energy.
Completely.
You can't isolate them enough, folks.
It doesn't work. Know? It just doesn't work. They don't care.
Yeah, they just stop caring. Yeah, and later waves of colonists were much worse. I mean, yeah. I think it was just, I was actually just looking, like, something like 80,000 people eventually just kind of started descending on these areas, you know, because it became like this Puritan hotspot. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you have a lot more of the problematic stories. So it's like, it's as far as like the first yes. Thanksgiving, quote unquote, right. being this relatively harmonious exchange, I suppose that's not too inaccurate.
Right. Yeah.
Every Thanksgiving thereafter, though,
there were problems. And less so. Like, and conflict. And, but yeah, I would say that like the first generation of the Pilgrims really, and as well as they knew how, did right by the Native people, which I did not, I didn't know, but like, you're right. Nobody else did. Everybody else is fucking monsters. And it was, you know, it was a point of pride actually for the Pilgrims. They were like, we did not steal any land. We purchased all of this, you know, probably not like sometimes like the Native people didn't have a lot of say in like how much it was purchased for, but sometimes they were, you know, they tried to pay fairly when they could, and it kind of worked out. So,
or at very least having a formal understanding that like, right, we would like to live here. Is that okay? What would you like for this land?
Totally.
Like some amount of respectful exchange.
Right.
Even if it was like for a price that seems ridiculous simply because ownership as a concept wasn't necessarily
a thing
in some tribes.
Yeah.
You know, certainly ownership of, you know,
property was not really.
But sure, you want to live here. That's fine. You want to give us these things and have some kind of mutual exchange. Sure. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it didn't work. Poor guys, but they suffered. They suffered enough, I would say, for
they suffered needlessly for their beliefs enough, and they deserve
it, and then,
to.
Yeah, and then it didn't work, and their kids didn't care. The end.
The end. Yeah, honestly, so many parallels. Honestly, with this, like, because I feel like I do feel like homeschool parents intentionally suffer so much, needlessly,
oh my gosh. Right?
Only to have their kids grow up and be like, yeah, no,
mm-mm, not it.
So, a lesson we seem to never keep learning.
Yeah, that's such a great way. That's such a great way to put it. Such a great way to put it. I do have to say though, like I was obsessively texting you when I was reading these books.
You were.
I was freaking out, and I was like, "There are so many parallels here. I don't know what to do with this information. Like they are still exactly like this."
Yeah, like it's. When you start to realize that like America was founded by the religious nut jobs, like, and even though I think probably the folks that actually did the work of creating a government 100 and some odd years later with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were not that, they were governing religious nut jobs.
Yeah.
Like
that was what England had to trade back in those days.
Yes, yeah, that was England,
Spain, England's
stock and trade. Yep. Was
like, okay,
you can have our religious nut jobs, our prisoners, our social outcasts, and our opportunistic white guys.
Uh-huh.
Go make a colony out of that. It will turn out great, I'm sure.
It's still going strong. It's still going strong.
You know, I suppose we are England's most successful colony. In all of the ways that are great and all the ways that are not great. We're like England supersized.
Yeah. And there's just so many ways to feel about it. So many ways. But yeah. Anyway.
Lots to discuss around the Thanksgiving table.
Truly. This is not a good time. But again, I feel like they suffered well and good for their sins.
Yeah. So. They did.
I'm like, I'm not that mad at them. Everybody else, no, fuck you. But the Pilgrims specifically, like, okay, you did your time. Time served.
Time served.
Yeah. So anyway.
Alrighty. Well, we hope you have a lovely holiday. Wherever you're listening to this, whatever you're getting ready to celebrate or not celebrate, a day in, a drive, and just a whatever it is, whatever Festivus brings you this year, we hope it's good. So
yeah,
thanks. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.